I'm Sid Garza-Hillman, and this is what I think.
Three minutes of silence. I'm going to give you a little insight into the mornings in the Garza-Hillman household. I take the kids to school. It's one of my favorite things. My dog, Prim, she now goes, I go, you want to take the kids to school? And she goes racing out to the car. We all pile in the car and we go. The routine is that the children, three of them, rotate song choices. So Luna, the oldest, she starts. And then last year it went Ronan and Rena. This year it goes Rena and Ronan. They're twins. We got to do that year to year. That's just how it goes. That's the twin dynamic. For those of you who don't have twins, man, it's all sorts of compromise and negotiation. So the rotation of songs. Out of the blue, last week, my son, 2 weeks ago actually, when it was his choice last, he goes, for my song, I choose 3 minutes of silence. 3 minutes of silence. I was all for it. I was like, that's fantastic. The girls were not having it, but you know, that's his choice. So that was what we did. 3 minutes, we looked at the clock, 3 minutes, silence, quiet. Coincidentally, I'm listening to this podcast with a guy named Cal Newport. If you guys have listened to my old show, Approaching the Natural Podcast, I talked about Cal Newport. He wrote a book called Deep Work. And he's got a new one coming out called Digital Minimalism. I'd love to get him on this show, but he's too big and fancy. Maybe. I don't know. I've never tried. I'm too not big and lazy. He's talking about solitude, and I'm very fascinated with this, and I'm reading another book about it right now. And the definition that he used in this podcast of solitude was taken from somebody else, but I really liked it, which is time where you are not receiving any inputs from other minds. So in other words, you can have solitude in the busiest and most crowded of places. It's just a matter of if you are with your own thoughts or if you are taking inputs from other minds. That can be music, that can be work, that can be social media, of course, that can be news. If you don't have those things and you're just thinking in your brain, that's solitude. And we're losing that at all, and how necessary, even on a neurological, brain, physiological level, how necessary that time is to process. We don't process anymore. We are constantly, information's coming in, but we're not really processing that information. And so it's actually not becoming less effective. We want to sort of become more informed and more informed and more informed and always be stimulated with all these things. But all in all, on the balance, less is more in this regard. If we do less of that, but actually have more time of silence, we do better in terms of thinking and working through problems, but also our overall stress levels. Totally fascinating stuff for me. I just thought it was coincidental. My son's like, 3 minutes of silence, and I'm digging it. I'm like, no radio, like nothing. It's just quiet. It literally is quiet, no conversation. And I'm thinking, great for my kids. And even in 2 weeks, they're sort of used to that. He keeps choosing that. That's his bag. And I'm all for it. 3 minutes of silence. Okay, so I'm back from Los Angeles. It is Valentine's Day, actually, 2019. Anybody listening to this knows that the dates have nothing to do with anything on this show. I'm just saying Valentine's Day. Am I a fan? Not really. I don't, you know. You know, what am I gonna? What, heart chocolates? Right? Drinking water. Neither here nor there. This was the day. This was the day that I decided to do the podcast. Okay, I haven't spent a while, but you know why? Because I was down in Los Angeles. Why was I down in Los Angeles? Playing a show with the band. 50 years old, I turned last December, and I gave myself a gift. I've talked to you guys about this before, but my gift was I wanted to play a show with the band. It's been 14 years, 14 friggin' years. So I went down there. I called them first, of course, and we went down there, and they booked a show, and we rehearsed a few times, fell into the old... Just so cool. Great to see those guys and amazing. And it was a good show. Like, we filled the little bar we played in, and the kids got to see me play. And my old nervousness came back, and it was, you know, just, I don't know, it was weird. I haven't done that in a long time. So that was the whole point. And it was exactly what I had hoped it to be. We did get a bunch of video. I know you guys have been asking me, some of you listeners, and I do have video. So side note, in 2005, there was a guy shooting a documentary on my band, and he never finished it. And about 9 years ago, after I'd moved out of Los Angeles, I emailed him and said, hey, send me that footage if you have it, because I wanted it. So I have it, and I've been cutting the documentary myself. It's weird to watch 2005 footage, and I mean hours of footage. I'm cutting it right now. I've got about 45 minutes. It'll probably be less than an hour in terms of the whole film. And I'm finishing the documentary with a cut to 2014, 2019, 14 years later. me going down to Los Angeles and rejoining the band and playing this show and also releasing the album that I recorded with the band in 2005 and never released. And I letterpressed some limited edition, up to 250. We hand numbered them and had those at the show. People bought them. I'll have those for sale, and the record will be on iTunes, and I'll make that announcement when it happens. But anyway, so if anybody's interested in the record, I don't even have it up on my site. I'm so like, yeah, whatever. But if you want to get it, it's super cool. I hand letterpressed it, and and the CD is good, professional, like full on mastered in 2005, ready, and we just never released it. 14 years it took. So that's out, and that was really fun. So all in all, I'm back from LA, saw some old friends. And that's the stuff, man. That is the stuff. Am I right? Okay. Did you guys enjoy the Aerosmith allegory? Left that one up for 10 days. Figured, I might as well piss off some people, weed out some people who are, not into stories about Steven Tyler, which is most. I may have maybe 4 people left. Okay. So consider yourself one of the many, one of the few, one of the lucky, one of the elite, dare I say. This episode is called The Periphery, and it came up because I am helping my daughter, Luna, my 14-year-old, with biology homework. And I'm digging it. This is my problem with education. I think teachers are incredible. Like, what a job. So difficult on levels, and they have to do it every year. And a good teacher, man, they should be showered with money and praise, and just because to get a child excited in a subject and a con is unbelievable. And I'm looking at this stuff now. I'm back to school to become a nutritionist, in 2008, 17 years after I graduated from college. And now I'm excited about this stuff. In high school, I was totally not excited about it, kind of the way my daughter is too. And I'm sort of trying to help her see how brilliant this stuff is, and I'm digging it because I'm getting refreshers of all the stuff that I learned when I was, doing the nutrition thing. So we're talking about hormones, and we're talking about the nervous system, and we're talking about, the endocrine/hormone and the nervous system, and we're talking about just the circulatory system, all this amazing stuff. And I'm just like all jazz, and she's looking at me like I'm crazy. I mean, she's looking at me like I'm crazy, and I'm going, "This is amazing! This is amazing! Yes." Kind of losing the battle. But anyway, we were talking about the nervous system, and it was the central versus the peripheral. Okay. So coincidentally, I was in this thought weird place where, you guys know, if you've listened to the first episode of this podcast, that I'm only going to do these episodes when something hits me. And coincidentally, in that kind of, and I'm thinking about things all the time, and in these moments of silence, so my son inspired me to sometimes, I listen to audiobooks in the car and podcasts and things, but sometimes I've been just shutting it off, quiet, no music, nothing. And I'm kind of digging it. So I'm taking a little bit of my drive, which is about 15, 20 minutes to the resort, to just have silence and not meditate. I'm not trying to breathe and trying to this and trying to listen to I'm just nothing. If I think about stuff, this is what it is. It's the processing that I'm kind of very interested in right now. But regardless, okay, so peripheral nervous system. So in the moment, I was thinking about the periphery. So here's what I mean, and that was the inspiration of the title of this episode. Deep breath, and here we go. That was a deep breath for me, because I feel like I'm talking a little fast. It's the water. It jacks you up, doesn't it? Mm. On the drive home from Los Angeles, about 11 hours, I did something that I do not ever do, rarely. And I did a little yerba mate. I know you guys, I know. I'm sorry. I hope I don't lose more listeners. Yerba mate. I know. I got a can. It was a can. I didn't want coffee at 9 o'clock at night, And so I got the yerba mate. It was good, and it gives you a little lift. Kept me awake, but not jacked, not edgy, not nervous, not peripheral nervous system. You know what I'm saying? If there is if there's any good, and it's like a little hard for me to see the good, but I'm more on that in a second. But this, in the United States, we've got President Trump, and I put presidents in quotes, but that's just air quotes for me. That's me. That's my own President Trump. One of the books I'm reading right now is on leadership. It's called Lead Yourself First. I'm going, well, this book was written by me, should have been, not. Wish it were. Damn it. Instead, I wrote Raising Healthy Parents. Oh, that's about my parents? No, it's about you as a parent. Jiminy Christmas. If there's good, that is coming out of this Trump era. And it kind of pisses me off when they say like the Trump era. I'm like, that guy shouldn't get an era. And I know that there's policy that he's doing that's helpful. Like it's, I'm not, there's things that he's done that are very good. I am just in this weird love, like, do ends always justify the means, or sometimes they do, but most of the time they don't. But if there's good out of this era, it's that we are seeing, and by we, I'll tell you who we is in a second. We're seeing in this sort of upheaval, and I'm looking at this as upheaval. He is fulfilling his promise of shaking up the system. There's no doubt about that. Will there be some collateral damage? Yeah. There's definitely collateral damage. Yes. Okay. But there's upheaval. But what we're seeing, to me, I'm seeing the nature of the edges. What I'm looking at now, and you know, I'm going to be a broken record, but it's always going to come down to the individual, but more on that in a second, just in terms of our own ability to be strong enough to know where we stand and have the strength to continue standing there. But in this upheaval, I'm seeing the nature of the edges. I'm seeing the what the periphery really is about. We see that we are seeing the periphery because in this era it has a voice. I don't want to say fringe. I think that's a pejorative term in a sense, but it is fringe. I'll stick with periphery. Okay, so we've got this era where we're seeing the periphery, that it has a voice, a stronger voice than potentially ever before. This coupled with social media, which gives in a way everyone an equal footing, and there's a beauty in that. But then there's also a thing of like the periphery sort of going like, well, I because I can write something in a comment box, it's just what I say is just as valid as whatever somebody else says. Now, this is dangerous territory because, yes, it's valid if it comes from a person and everyone gets a voice, and I'm all for that. But I was listening to this podcast. It's interesting. He said, this one guy was saying, you know, in the era of blogs, when it was less about social media, the blog was like a place where when people would comment, most people who would comment would read the entire blog and then comment on it. And if they had a negative comment versus a positive feedback or whatever, at least it was more substantial. But now it's sort of this battle of 140 characters. It's like, well, you put 140 characters and I'm going to put my 140 characters in, and you're going to put your 140 characters. And it's all this like tidbit feedback crap that I can't stand. Like, I just don't like it. You know where I stand. And then I got off all social media. But it sort of leveled the playing field. So the crazies, and that's definitely pejorative, but let's just say the periphery jumps in and goes, well, equal footing, when they, in a way, many have not done the thinking or the consideration, the minutes of silence to process. It's all anger. It's all vitriol. It's all reaction. Very little action. And it scares me. It scares me a little bit. So then I'll relate it to what came next this past week. I was listening to a podcast by a guy named Ezra Klein. He's an intelligent guy, obviously super intelligent. I definitely have issues. I don't agree with everything he says, but that's great, right? That's fine. But there's intellect there for sure, and there's thought and debate, and it's all good. But he was interviewing this professor of philosophy. I'm a philosopher. And it was a little unsettling, this discussion. It was, for me, I had a really big problem with a lot of what was being said in this podcast. And I think ethically, I probably agreed with most what this philosopher was saying, but in terms of the values behind it. But man, there was some just stuff that was just rah, a bummer. And one of the things that was interesting was this idea of I think Ezra Klein was talking about it, you know, T-shirts that say like the future is feminist, or the future is feminism, or the future is feminine, I think it says, and then like girl power and all these kinds of things. And I'm thinking about my son, who my wife and I are raising, and he, in a way, he's when he sees things like that, I think for him, he's going, wait, was there ever a time where that wasn't, where girls didn't have power? Like, to him, he's this next generation where maybe I'm seeing and maybe I'm probably even young too, but seeing the transition of, hopefully a transition of where things are, equaling out in terms of opportunity for men and women and whatever, and the lines will hopefully matter less to be able to emerge and pursue anything that they want, and to get past the very obvious obstacles that have been alive and are still alive in many cases. But for him, he you know, his twin sister, it's not like I go, listen, you know, she's not been able to, now she's going to, we want her to be able to. It's like he goes, yeah, of course, like, why was that ever? And it's, in a way, it's sad, because I don't want him to look at, say, like, wait, was that ever a thing? He doesn't even think about it. It's just a given. It's not a weird thing, it's a given. Who wouldn't think a girl can do anything? Like, wait, somebody thinks a girl can't do anything? Like, that's in his, I don't even know if it would be a conversation. I remember years ago, long, like, way 20 years, 15 years before I ever went back to school to become a nutritionist, I was in a health food store. I was into nutrition even then, but, you know, wasn't, like, doing it or whatever. And I saw this package and it said wheat-free. And I remember going, wheat-free? When did wheat become a problem? Like, again, I didn't know. Like, I didn't know about gluten, and I didn't know any of that stuff. And I was like, wheat? Because, you know, your whole life you're told wheat's good for you. At least that's what I was told. It's wheat, whole wheat, great. And this said wheat free. And I was like, oh, for the love of all that's holy. Now wheat's bad for you. It's like Jiminy Christmas, what's next? Right, kind of thing. And I sort of feel like that with him. It's like, wait, what? This happened? Was there a time when, like, girls couldn't do this? So, fine. My wife and I, we educate. We share history with all of our three children. With an ethic behind it of helping to, I guess, in a big picture, in some very, 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 very small way, ensure that it never happens again. I mean, that's a good thing to understand our history so that we don't repeat those things. That's very trite, but it's true, right? But in today's environment, here's what scares me. When the periphery has emerged with a voice, then you've got the periphery liberal and the periphery conservative making it seem like what they're saying is normal, and it's actually not. And what is making me nervous about this philosopher is she was saying some very racist shit, and I mean by definition. Now, this is going to ruffle feathers, but racism is racism. Now, this is the weird thing for me and I consider myself into philosophy. I've got a bachelor's degree there. I'm thinking about these things in this way. If we look at racism and define racism, we can't say, well, you can only be racist against a certain race, but not racist against another race. The definition of racism is making assumptions about people based on the color of their skin. That can be white and not white. It's, you know, brown, whatever they, however they, it's black, brown, whatever, you know, they always describe skin color, whatever. But racism is racism. Now, there's a school, I think, of thought, which is like, okay, if a certain race has been treated really, really badly, and obviously that's freaking true in this country, in the United States anyway, then maybe it's now time for the oppressor to be the oppressee. Maybe it's time now that the tides turn, and now it's, you know, white males. And what's happening is that I don't think you can fight racism with racism. It's a belief I have. I don't think that you can fight racism with racism. I believe that someone has to be the bigger person or people. Some people have to step up and say, the cycle has to end. The whole eye for an eye thing was like, well, you were oppressed, and now, okay, now I get to be oppressed. It sucks, but the cycle has to be broken. And what is happening is that the periphery conservative is saying crazy ass shit, but so is a periphery liberal. And I think that the periphery liberal sounds a little more magnanimous and compassionate, but when you really parse the language of, you know, white male this and white male that, and the assumptions about sexism, which is all males are this way and all white males are this way, that's racist and it's sexist. Now, do we deserve it? On some level, you can make that argument. I don't deserve it. My son certainly doesn't deserve it. And if you are classing anybody and my wife, who's a white woman, so therefore she's got problems or whatever, like, again, I've talked about this before, but we sort of make all these cuts and these lines. Well, you're white, but you're a woman, but then you're this, and but you're not straight, and then you're this, and then you're that, and you're, and all of a sudden it all sort of falls apart when you go down that rabbit hole. It's very weird to just live your entire life by looking at classing people by whatever categories you can and then making assumptions about those people. That is worse. It's done in the most worst way on the periphery. It just is. And if we decide that we want this to end, if that is the end game, if the end game is not requiring equality in terms of this person gets this job and so this person gets this job, but if we want to say like everybody should have an equal opportunity, everybody should be treated with respect and consideration, everybody should have a chance to pursue their own health and happiness, they should be able to do the things in their world and not be stopped, and certainly not be stopped because of the color of their skin, and certainly not be stopped by their sexual preference, and certainly not be stopped by their sex. And that's and if we understand and believe in that ethic and say, well, then this is our end game, then we have to say, look, where are we going to get to that end game? Are we going to get to it by now moving the oppression to another class? Or are we going to say, this has got to stop and we need to work on a system that empowers everybody to do this? Now, is this just a cycle we're going to have to go through? Maybe. Maybe we're going to have to go through the cycle of this thing, but this philosopher professor of Cornell isn't doing anything to help anybody. And she was getting caught in illogical statement after illogical statement. Ezra Klein did a very good job of saying, well, wait, but what about this? Oh, well, no, because you can't, it's logic doesn't apply. It's nuts. It's nuts. So the periphery has this voice. And meanwhile, most of us, and I mean seriously most of us, I believe this to be true. Most of us are the center. Most of us are the middle. Now, in this day and age, the middle means compromise. You don't stand for that. And I fully disagree with that. I think the middle is the middle and the center, not because of compromise, but because there is actually nuance and complexity and intelligence in the world. The center is the center because we're not rigid. We're not controlled. We're not boxed in. We don't, for the most part, we may have tendencies or you know, like reactions, but we don't act on those things. We understand the bigger picture we let our human versus lizard, that episode you probably heard, maybe, hopefully, but anyway, we let the human side of us dictate more than the periphery does, which is all about gut reaction and boxing people in and categorizing. The center, while we may feel those things, we understand what the end game is, and we understand, and we're center because we see racism and we see sexism no matter where it is. We don't give a certain type of racism a pass. And we certainly don't give any racism or sexism a voice. We don't give it a voice. Even for people that have a, you know, that gut reaction, but they go, whoa, that, where'd that come from? I must have been raised this way, but holy crap, I'm not acting on that crap. We're center because we have opinions. And we can listen. We don't just have opinions and go, and this is it, and I'm digging my heels in because I'm 5 emotionally. We go, I'm kind of hanging and I want to have a conversation. I want to have a debate. I want to listen. I really want to see what the other side is talking about. I might disagree, but at least I know that I disagree, instead of just me all about digging my heels in and just classing everybody who's not in my political spectrum or not my sex or not my color as not me and therefore wrong. I think that's a very dangerous road to go down, and we're going down it. We are going down it. I'll just put it that way. It's happening right now. I'm hearing more of these sort of so-called mainstream, and they kind of sound good, but when you really listen to the words out of their mouths, I'm like, this is insane, and not in a good way. Not a good insane. Not a nutty nut, mind you. If there is any good during this time, any good, it's that perhaps the loud voice of the periphery will have their 15 minutes and then hopefully fade back into, well, the periphery.
Locked down and unfree, like this. Stapled down upholstery, like this. Stapled down upholstery, like this. Stapled down upholstery. And oh, I only care when I see you and me. turned its ugly head to me. Then the days just fall asleep. Then the days just fall asleep. And the days just fall asleep. And oh, I only care when it takes over me.
Misplaced, more wary of strangers.